signature home run by Devin Taylor. His 12th of the season and 48th home run in his career. With that home run, Devin Taylor has now broken the Indiana baseball all-time career record and now stands alone atop the program's home run king. Congratulations, Devin Taylor.
Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, April 21st, 2025. I'm Carl James, joined by Zach Horwitz, Chris Feeney, and Cassidy Palmer. Indiana had an eventful week. Tuesday saw the Hoosiers drop another close game, this time in the final home midweek against Indiana State. The Bats didn't do enough to overcome several balls finding holes in the middle innings. The Hoosiers were down 6-1, going into the bottom of the eighth on Friday in the series opener with Maryland, and showed that they are more than capable of staging a comeback and grinding out a win in a close game. Will Moore got on in the eighth after Cooper Malamazian cut the lead to one run with a two-run bomb. Moore scored on a two-out infield single by Corbin Dickerson. Tyler Cerny, representing the winning run, got to third base on an errant pickoff throw with no outs. The sacrifice opportunity was squandered by two strikeouts. That brought back up Moore, who got into a two-strike count of his own, but went the other way for a line drive single to walk it off. For his weekend efforts, Moore was named Big Ten Freshman of the Week. In steady rain on Saturday, Cole Gilley and Grant Holderfield were ineffective in a pair of disastrous early innings that led to Maryland evening up the series on Saturday. Despite seeming outplayed, Maryland managed to tie the Easter Sunday rubber match at three runs apiece in the sixth before an onslaught of runs, including a historic three-hit, three-walk, reach-base-in-all-appearances performance by Devin Taylor, who called game in the bottom of the eighth inning with a three-run bomb to clinch the run rule and give Indiana the series win. Chris, there were several great performances in that series. Who gets the red belts this week?
Yeah, sometimes these aren't the easiest of jobs to do. All I know, regardless of a red belt, Will Moore joins the table with Craig Dietolo and Luke Miller, Braden Tucker, guys who have had some amazing performances to beat some Maryland teams. So, I mean, it was just Friday night is just legendary. I mean, that one, that's a ticket stub game. Luckily, I was able to get a ticket to put up on my shelf. I mean, you're down, what is it, 6-1 in the eighth inning, dead in the water. I mean, dead in the water. I don't think we had a guy to second base. I mean, we might have, but I don't remember it. And to think what we pulled off, it really is. Will Moore's walk-off, he literally joins, you know, a list of names that and it's amazing. Rain. The rain with the Maryland, and he's from Canada, and Maryland with their USA nonsense from years ago. The boy from Ontario to walk him off, I thought was fitting too. But those who've been watching and listening for years, I mean, we can go back. It's just so many. And it's wild because you got the freshmen, right? The freshmen of this season and Corbin Dickinson, they don't know about what happened last year. How we got dragged behind the woodshed and smoked for 3 days, however that series went. To think that this is what we're coming back from. And then now we're down by 6-1 in the eighth as we're playing them again. But the comeback came. And like you said, yeah, Saturday, not so good. But then Sunday, you know, we weren't going to lose it. We did everything we wanted. We wanted clutch hitting late, right? We wanted big pitching performances late. We wanted great defense late. We got it all. So it just makes it even harder to give out the damn belts because of so many good performances. But I'll do the best I can. One of them obviously is not difficult, I don't think. I mean, if you go on Saturday and become the career the career team leader for home runs with his, what was that, his 48th bomb, Devin Taylor. And then Sunday, I mean, first inning walk, third inning a walk, fourth inning walk, sixth inning double with a ribby. Seventh inning single with a steal. And then, like, that wasn't enough. He walks him off in the eighth with a three-run bomb for number 49 for Devin Taylor. So he's definitely gotten the Alex Dickerson Award. When it comes to defensive, this one, again, was a little bit easier. I feel like we played great D all along. The double play to get Kraft out of that jam. And I looked up, what was it? It was in the top of the sixth, right? We had the meeting at the mound. Are we going to leave Kraft in? Yes, we are. Kraft, boom, double play, bang. And these were bang, bang plays. We had three or four double plays, I can remember, throughout the weekend.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Caleb Koski out in right field. Now, that's where I was for the games that I was able to attend and the innings I was able to be there for is where I was. So I was out there by that rally table trying to make sure I was there for, you know, trying to help out and get Devin's ball, the home run or whatever the case with Bo and Nancy and everybody else trying to get that ball, Josh on Saturday. And Caleb, he plays a great right field. And he made a play. It was the gap between center and right field up against the wall, a really nice catch. And then in that inning, that was the one where Kraft got relieved by Grable. So it was a two men on and one out. So if he doesn't make that catch, that inning's totally different. And I don't know if the comeback happens. So Caleb Koski is going to get our Tony Butler award. Now this one was the hardest. This might honestly be one of the hardest ones of the whole season for me. For giving out the pitching award. If I ever could have split it up, if I ever could have said, you're Joey Donato and you're Joey, everybody's Joey Donato. No, we can't do that. So Ryan Kraft is going to get it. Okay. Ryan Kraft threw 91 pitches on Friday. All right. He gave up 6 hits and 2 runs. And if he doesn't do what he does, there is no Sunday. Okay. And there is no ninth inning on Friday. So that's why Ryan Kraft is going to get the Joey Donato award. The guy has just been money ever since. Whatever was wrong got fixed. I know if it was injury or confidence, whatever the case might be. 91 pitches. My starter for the Mets just went 91 pitches for 6 innings, to get the W. I mean, this was a start, basically, that just didn't start at the start of the game. And we needed it. And he pitched the entire time down.
Yeah.
You know, was it 4-1, 5-1, whatever it was. That's not easy. Where every pitch you throw, this lead could just grow and grow and grow. And he was here last year, and he knows the rivalry between us and them. And the performance he put out, really special. I will give an honorable mention just because it was so hard to decide who to pick out, and that's going to be Ben Grable. Because after that comeback in the eighth, if the ninth didn't go smooth, okay, I don't even want to know how he would have felt and how it would have went down. He throws the perfect ninth inning, and then he comes out on Sunday. I don't know, for those of you who were paying attention all weekend, but by the fourth inning on Friday, we were down 4-1. And by the fourth inning on Saturday, we were down 15-2. But by the fourth inning on Sunday, he had only given up 1 run and 3 hits and 4 Ks, and he held it and he kept it there so that we could have a lead. Yes, did we give it up? Sure. It ended up 3-3 before the big bats came out?
Yep.
But to just settle and calm it and for 4 innings to start a ball game, to do that for us was big. And I don't know which one was bigger, but I'm giving it to Kraft because without Kraft's Friday performance, the Grable stuff can't happen. That's where my mindset was. I don't really know how to decide it. I'm very grateful for both. And I hate Maryland from back with Cangelosi staring in the dugout and years ago. And I just can't. The USA teams, what were we, Germany? I remember them saying USA, USA. But even from back then, what was that, 2017, 2018? I don't even know.
That was 2017.
Was it 2017?
Yeah, because I remember we were trying to get it going in the Big Ten tournament because when the Big Ten tournament was in Bloomington, and now granted we ended up not playing Maryland, that's what I tie that to.
Yeah, it was so silly. I don't even know where it came from, but they had to be USA for some reason. It was just ridiculous. But Will Moore joins Luke Miller, joins Craig Dedalo. George Braden Tucker with that performance to knock, what was it, the 8-1, right? Was that great pitching he had to knock them out? And it's a list that it's a great list to be on. And any day is a great day to beat Maryland, whether it's bowling, field hockey, football, whatever it is. And so this weekend was great, and it was a nice Easter. I couldn't be out there Sunday with the family, but following along as best as I can. And Devin. He decided to send us home. We didn't even need a ninth inning. It was a beautiful thing. There are more games to obviously play. Zach's going to preview us. The Bloomington team's heading to the big city, right? We're going to preview Ball State and Victory Field. Zach's going to give us some info on Ball State.
Thank you. But Chris, before that, 3 or 4 weeks ago, you introduced a new red belt. And yep. I almost caught my second foul ball, but Luke Brenneman did. So
now
tied 1-1. in the Brent Tonsoni red belt. So
So we got another Tonsoni belt out. Okay.
another one.
Nice.
I
Was it
almost
clean
had two.
catch?
Clean catch, one hand on the broadcast.
Sweet.
It was impressive.
He was
But it
calling
on
the
the
game at the
broadcast.
time, right?
He's calling the game.
Wait a minute. While he was calling the game?
Yes, while he was calling the game.
Oh, no.
That is great.
Oh, that gets extra points somehow.
I know. I think maybe his name is above mine on the ranking
No
sheet now.
offense. The guy was doing play-by-play in quarter. That's crazy.
Yeah. A foot to the right, it would have been number two for me, but
Ooh.
it's what it is.
You gotta pick it off, man. You gotta get in there.
All right. So our next midweek game, Ball State. So this is the second time around that Indiana will play Ball State. Game one in Bloomington showed 7-5 on the scoreboard in favor of the Hoosiers. They controlled the ball game with 5 runs in the third inning and stopped a late rally as Ball State plated 3 in the ninth. I expect the pitching plan to be similar to that game that took place on April 8th. Indiana utilized 4 lefties out of the bullpen, with Darren Swanson getting the bulk of the game. In that one, he tossed 4.1 scoreless innings. It was awesome. So this Ball State team has been on fire since the last two teams, since the time the teams met. They're 6-1 since that game, and they now sport a 29-12 overall record. They're 15-3 in the conference, and they scored 39 runs over the last two games in the weekend series against Bowling Green. So look into the team. Watch out for Dylan Grego. What a weekend he had. 7 for 16, 4 home runs, a double, a triple, and 22 RBIs in 3 games. So they limited him in the first meeting as Grego went 1 for 5 with a pair of strikeouts. The other Cardinals batter to look out for is the right side of the middle infield is second baseman Nick Hasovsky. He was 3 for 5 with 3 RBIs against Indiana the last time out. He has a 321 batting average across all 41 games they've played this year. So for the fourth time in 9 years, this matchup will be played at Victory Field in Indianapolis. The dimensions are similar to the BART in the corners, but deeper in the gaps. So certainly less wind than the BART as well. So expect a game with less long balls than usual. Tickets are between $8 on the grass berm in the outfield and up to $14 in the infield box seats. I saw today Indiana SRN will stream the game, or you can listen on the Indiana Sports Radio Network. And the first pitch for that game is slated for 6 p.m. So that's Indiana and Ball State at Victory Field on Wednesday, 6 p.m. So now, after that one, we have the weekend series, and it's a big one in Iowa. So, Cass, what can we expect from the Big Ten leading Iowa Hawkeyes?
Thank you, Zach. Definitely the Big Ten leading Iowa Hawkeyes. Those games are currently scheduled for Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. I also do want to note for any of the people making the trip to Iowa City, Friday is Star Wars night for their baseball team. The Saturday game is scheduled for 3 p.m. Eastern, and Sunday is scheduled for 2 p.m. Eastern. All of those are probably a few minutes later, and are all scheduled to be on BTN Plus, Big Ten Plus, whatever. Iowa currently has the 57th RPI. They are 27-11 overall. Like we said, leads the Big Ten at 17-4 in conference play, and they are a whopping 12-2 at home. They are 7-0 in Big Ten series, including sweeps of Michigan, Minnesota, and Ohio State. And in Big Ten play in particular, they've done lots of winning big, and then the few losses have been close losses. The exception to that has been last week versus Michigan, where they won 6-5, 3-2, and 7-4. All of those were close, relatively low scoring games. They have had lots of double digit run games. They're averaging 8.5 runs a game compared to 4 runs given up. So they've got a quality offense and a crazy good pitching staff. On the offensive side, they're hitting .310, which does lead the Big Ten in batting average. They're kind of middle of the pack for power, including 51 home runs on the year. That puts them squarely in the middle of the pack. They're drawing 5 to 6 walks a game. They don't have a ton of steals, but they do tend to be successful when they run. As far as individual guys, they've used a ton of guys. They've got the talent that they can do matchups based on whoever's pitching or expected to pitch the most innings in a game. So they actually only have 4 players who have qualifying at bats, but all of those 4 are hitting 320 or better. And while nobody's at the top of the home run list, most of the regular guys do have the capability to launch at any time. On the pitching side, for Iowa, pitching is everything this year. They have a 3.65 staff ERA, which is top in the Big Ten. They only issue 4 walks a game compared to 10 strikeouts, which is, again, top of the Big Ten. They've only given up 37 home runs on the year. They have a 1.26 whip, again, top of the Big Ten, and a 2.16 batting average against, top of the Big Ten. Compared to a lot of the other teams IU has faced this year, Iowa has 3 legit weekend starters. All of these guys can go easily 6 to 7 innings on a good day. Friday, expect to see lefty Cade Obermueller. He has a 2.50 ERA, which is third amongst all qualifying pitchers in the Big Ten, and just a 2.02 batting average against, and he's only given up 3 home runs on the year. Aaron Savory is a righty. He typically starts on Saturday. He has a 3.67 ERA and a 1.99 batting average against. He's under that Mendoza line. And that's 4th in the conference. And then Sunday, expect to see Reese Buter, another righty. He has a 3.99 ERA and a 2.13 batting average against. So pitch it. The Hoosier bats are up for a humongous test this weekend. And the pitching staff is going to have their own hill to climb. But this pitching staff is, especially when they are on, they are scary good as a staff. And in what seems to be my weekly weather report, April showers apparently are continuing. Again, it's a little too far out to say anything for sure, but it's looking, at the moment, it's looking good for all 3 games in their scheduled slots. But there's likely going to be rain Friday throughout the day, should be good for the evening, and there's expected to be rain both Sunday morning and Sunday evening. As of now, should be good for the afternoon. But as we get closer, keep your eyes on Weather Channel. Keep your eyes on the team's social media accounts, because as we've seen, things can change pretty quickly. So keep that in mind. Fingers crossed we won't have to do any changes. I honestly don't expect any doubleheaders or anything like that currently, but you could see some game times shifting around. So that's what we're looking at this upcoming weekend. Chris, I hear you've got some pros updates.
Well, only the greatest thing you can hear about one of your pro alumni. About 3 o'clock today, it came across Twitter, X, Facebook, whatever you want to call it, that Craig Yoho is getting called up to the bigs. So he'll be up there with the Milwaukee Brewers organization, the big show, the whole thing. And I've got to say, this has got to be the quickest that somebody who made the old freshman team in his last season in the Big Ten that made the majors. I mean, I know he was like 23 when it happened, but so because of medical red shirts and games played, he was literally still a freshman as he left IU. And I mean, so happy for him. He was always such a like solid, you know, you could count on him late end of the games whenever we decide to throw him out there. And honestly, I think I know Josh was putting in the thread. You know, I'm surprised he didn't get called up with the camp. I think that all had something to do with free agency and, you know, running his clock. Because, I mean, he had 43-something appearances last year, and he was rock solid in the minors. He could have started the camp. But either way, he in all his performances this year in the minors, I think he had 6-0 ERA. And congratulations to Craig Yoho and his family. I mean, this is a special, special day for one of our alumni. And, I mean, it'll only be even special the first time, you know, he gets to take the field for Milwaukee. Who knows when that'll be? We'll obviously try to keep everybody up to date on when he might get it, you know, his first opportunity. I think they're on the West Coast, the Brewers. So I'm going to have to break out the coffee to see Yoho getting his first pitch in the majors. A couple other updates, and it's fitting that it was a pitcher to talk about because our pitching has just been really outstanding. McCabe Brown, another scoreless outing. He hasn't allowed an earned run all year. He's got 6 strikeouts. They have been only giving him like 2 innings at a clip because he's coming off injury or whatever the case, but he is not letting anybody on base or score. Luke Senard, very similar. 7 strikeouts, 3 innings in his last outing. No earned runs the whole season for him as well. Braden Reinsdorf picked up another save, also a 0 ERA. So between them three and Yoho, those 4, not one gave up a run the whole season so far. It's pretty wild. As we were walking off Maryland on Friday night, Matt Gorski was with a walk-off victory for his Indianapolis Indians. I think Francisco Lindor did too, but he has no relation to IU. But that's okay. So it was a lot of walk-offs on Friday night, which was good. But, you know, we got a poll ran right before Yoho gets his call-up. Pro Bowl Hoosiers put out who's going to be the next, you know, alumni to make the majors. It was split 50-50 between Yoho and Gorski. So now that we got Yoho through, I guess Gorski is going to have to be next. I know we've been trying for a long, long time.
That's just criminal, Chris. I'm sorry. That's just criminal that he is still in AAA.
I've been saying, it's the Pirates. I could understand if it's this team that is like loaded all over the place and they can't find a way to put him in. I can't. Part of me thinks it's to sell tickets to the damn Indian games. Because if you always notice when it's on Twitter, they mention like hometown hero. Hometown hero does this. I think they're trying to sell tickets to the Indians games. I don't know. I can't come up with what it is. But one more pitcher, Gabe Bierman, solid performance. 5 strikeouts, no runs on his last 2 runs to the hill. So I don't know why they put him in the same level as last year, which for me was a little disappointing because I know he had some really good starts last year. Hopefully he moves up quicker too because we know Gabe was rock solid for us also as a Hoosier. But that's pretty much our Pro Bowl update. Now we're going to get a Big Ten update from Carl. Hopefully, I want to hear mass chaos around that 12 line. I want 18 teams tied for one spot.
All right. Well, the league right now, we already know that Iowa's at the top of that list. Now, one thing to note about Iowa is they have not made the West Coast portion of their hit the West Coast portion of their schedule. That's the last 2 weeks for them that they play. They play Washington and Oregon in the last 2 weeks. IU has pretty much kind of steady Eddie right in that smack dab in the middle there. IU is currently 7th, 5 games back. But you want to talk about chaos. There's another place that's chaos is that the top 4 seeds are very important when it comes to the Big Ten tournament. And right now, USC has that 4th spot. USC is 4.5 games behind Iowa. Indiana is only 0.5 a game in 7th behind USC. Now, obviously, with those 2 teams, if they end up tied, USC has the tiebreaker. That's one of the things that's unfortunate is right around that whole group, you've got USC, Penn State, and Illinois are all in that that real tight mess right in the middle, and Indiana has lost to all 3 of them. It would especially be bad if like all those teams ended up in like one big tie because the schedule amongst the teams becomes the tiebreaker. Now, to Chris's point, we've also got quite a log jam right at the Big Ten tourney cut line, which is the top 12 teams get in the tournament, 13 through 17 do not. And there is actually Nebraska, Rutgers, and Minnesota are all at 7 and 11 for that last spot right now. So there's three teams vying for that last spot. If the season were to end today, Nebraska's the one that gets the tiebreaker because of, one, how they did against Iowa, and two, how they've done against Rutgers. Yes, it's complicated, but if you go to iubase.com, click on standings, there is a link to the tiebreaker procedures if you really want to subject yourself to that. Some of us enjoy that stuff. Some people don't. So it's not a short document as to how these tiebreakers get determined. I did actually have to put one of my markers for the first time on a number, which is that Ohio State officially will not be the Big Ten champions. That has now been decided, as they are 13 and a half games out. They do not have enough games in order to even if they were to win out, to win the title.
Although I do appreciate that their only two wins on the year have come against Oregon.
Yeah.
They have literally been swept by every other Big Ten team they've played, but that not Oregon.
Yeah, but the only team they beat is the number 13 team in the country.
Yeah, that.
Yes, because Oregon, just after beating UCLA, passed UCLA in the D1 rankings. They're at 13, UCLA's at 15. Okay, so that will convert us into the Big Ten Pick'em, which is getting, for amongst our group, is getting more interesting, as Josh has caught Zach. They both lead at 32 and 14, which is a really nice mark overall. Chris is two series behind at 30 and 16. Cass has tied Chris. Cass went 7-0 last week. Absolute perfect performance from Cass. I went back to more of my average. I was only 4-3. I was pulling up the rear there, and I'm at 26 and 20. Hey, I'm just happy to be above 500 for the season at this point. So, I've been rolling the dice a little bit. I think, I knew my Northwestern at Nebraska pick was kind of bold, and and as it turns out, and I was feeling so good when Northwestern took that Friday game, but it was not to be. And I didn't think it was a roll of the dice to pick UCLA, although I was the only one that did.
That was my closest one. It was literally a coin toss.
I'm like, I pick the highest ranked team in the conference, and I'm the only one that does, and I lose. So I guess that's what I get. So
it's because Oregon wasn't playing Ohio State. So.
Yeah,
that was my theory on that pick. The only team they lose to is Ohio State. Weird.
Okay, so that does get us into the Big Ten Pick'em for this coming week, where we've got Rutgers traveling to Ohio State, Nebraska at Maryland, Michigan State at Michigan, Washington at Northwestern, Purdue at Illinois, Penn State at UCLA, and USC at Minnesota. Let me start with Josh's picks, since he sent those to me. Josh is going to be picking Washington, Rutgers, Nebraska, Michigan State, and USC. He's picking five road teams. And two at home, which are Illinois and UCLA. I will go ahead and go next. I've got, I'm going bold. I know that they're not Oregon, but I'm picking Ohio State to finally break out. And of course, again, they're not going to win one game. They're going to win two, which honestly, it's stating more about how I feel about Rutgers, honestly, than it is about Ohio State. But again, I, at this point, I have to be bold, so it's just when I'm in last place. So I'm going to go with Maryland at home against Nebraska. I'm going to go Michigan State at Michigan, Washington at Nebraska, Illinois at home. I got UCLA at home, and USC at Minnesota. All right. Cass, 7-0 last week. Can you bring that magic this week?
Maybe. I'm not gonna hold my breath on that one. I do not have, while I don't have a ton of faith in Rutgers, I have less faith in Ohio State. So I'm gonna say Rutgers. This one to me was a toss up, but I'm going Nebraska. I think Michigan is going to come off last week's sweep very pissed, and they're at home, so I'm going Michigan. Taking Washington, taking Illinois at home, UCLA at home, and while I think Minnesota might be able to sneak a game, I think USC's gonna take the series.
All right, Chris.
All right, so as I look at the standings here, I am trying to get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I want to get a six-way tie. I think I could do it. I'm going to look at Sparty as the cutoff for ninth, and then we can get the bottom three, and then the next three. So it'll be six teams for two spots. This would be historical. So if you're hoping for chaos, you know, you can take my picks. You know, you go on FanDuel or whatever the case. So for this to happen, which is what I mapped out here, which would leave the six, it's Rutgers, Maryland, Michigan State, Washington, Illinois, UCLA, Minnesota. And if you were too slow writing that down, Carl will get it on the site for you. But we want total chaos. I mean, they might have to change it. They might have to have a play-in, play-out game. This could be a new thing. Oh, and Carl, somebody was asking me at the BART for the new round robin, this and that pod thing they're doing. Mm-hmm. So can you just real quick explain how this
yes.
tournament works?
Okay. So you're going to have, and I'm assuming, I mean, I know I'm going to guess that it's going to be precisely the way the ACC did it last year, and I looked into that. So the way that works is the teams are split into 4 3-team pods. So you have, I think it's like 1, 8, and 12 in one pod. Then you go like 2, 7, 11 and 3, 6, 10 and then 4, 5, 9. Those are all pods. and you each team plays each other twice. And it starts with the two or lower seeded teams will play each other in each pod. And this is important because the tiebreaker for the pod, if all the three teams go 1-1, the highest seed team advances to the 4-team semifinal. So essentially, the way this works is, in reality, it's basically a single elimination tournament with a consolation game. Gotcha. Then the consolation game is with the one seed. So the way it works is then that team, so if you're the one of the top four seeds, you watch the other two teams play, and you have to play both of those teams. But if your goal above all else is to get to Saturday, you only care about beating the team that won that game. Right. You can throw your freshman pitchers that aren't that great, that aren't developed yet against the team that lost, because it's not going to impact whether you advance to Saturday.
And it's four. When it gets down to four, it's single elimination.
Correct.
So max games is four.
The max that any team is going to play is four. So you only have to have pitching for four games, as opposed to the way it had been when you could end up playing six games and have to have pitching for all of that. So at this point now, it's one of those things that's actually, I think, brings more chaos because to advance to Saturday, all you got to do is win two games. You just beat the other two teams in the pod, you advance to Saturday, and then it's a 4-team single elimination tournament to win the whole thing. So it's doable for anybody. And that's how it's set up. And again, I am only guessing that they're going to have the 2-3 seeds playing first, because that's the way the ACC's done it. I see no reason why they wouldn't. I'm pretty sure they're just going to copy, because it's the same number of days. I think it's going to be pretty well just copy and paste what the ACC did last year. And I keep saying last year because the ACC has changed their format. They're just doing a tournament that more matches like what you would see in the basketball side. So single elimination tournament with byes, essentially. So
based on the bracket that Big Ten has released so far, that pretty well lines up. It's all the I do like that it's a maximum of one game a day. There's for maximum of three games per day, weather dependent, but three games total. The 11 versus 7, 10 versus 6, 12 versus 8 the first day.
Yeah.
And then it goes from there.
Okay. So it's I didn't realize they've not put them out that soon before. So I hadn't actually looked that up.
Yep, they've put that out, and it looks like for pool play, the games are slated to be this does not give times are local. 11 a.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Eastern, and 7 p.m. Eastern on all of the days. So that's nice for consistency.
But if there's weather, they would be willing. They'd be willing to start earlier if they had to. Yep. So.
Yep.
And in the middle or later, or crazy later. as we have noted in the past.
One in the morning against Rutgers.
Yeah. Oh, and God. As we've drifted off topic, Zach still needs to make his picks.
Yes, Zach, your picks.
I'm fighting for first place here. Let's not skip this over. I have two different picks than Josh, so we'll be a solo leader next week unless somebody else comes up with us. But anyway, I got Rutgers over Ohio State. I think this Maryland pitching staff, or the starting rotation at least, was really good this weekend. So I have Maryland over Nebraska if the bullpen can somehow shut it down. I have Michigan at home against Michigan State. I'll take Washington against Northwestern, Illinois over Purdue, UCLA over Penn State, and then USC over Minnesota.
Excellent. I'm actually trying to record these now so I can save myself some time. And I'm going to save the changes this time, which I forgot to do last week. I had to go back and put it back together again. Okay. So that's that concludes the Big Ten Pick'em portion of this. I do have one other aspect of my segment this week, and that is I do want to go ahead and discuss a little bit of bracketology, which is mostly to look at, is there a reason to look at this at all? And while things have gone okay over the last few weeks, we kind of all had internal discussions amongst ourselves that for at-large purposes, Indiana kind of needed to sweep Maryland, and that did not happen. And then you throw in the loss to Indiana State in the last week, and things are looking a little tough. But now I've actually got some more hard numbers. We're late enough in the season that Boyd's World has its needs report out now. And Boyd goes off of what are the typical cut lines, and they're not really cut lines. They're just because RPI is not a precise thing. They're not going to take the top 45 teams and at large. There's roughly 45 teams selected, and I would say they come out of the top 60. But there's reasons why you might pick someone like IU was like 55 last year and got in. But in general, the RPI target is 45 to get an at-large bid. And to get to top 45 in RPI, Boyd's World is saying Indiana needs to go 13-2 from here on. That is not an easy road at all. Now, this team gets hot. Everything clicks together. The pitching works out, and the bats are consistent and score each time. And maybe line up a couple games where if the pitching isn't great, are the days that the bats get really hot, win a couple games like, 18-12 or something. it's not out of the realm of possibility, but it's not something I would be, putting large amounts of money on if I were a gambling person, which I'm not. So
the question is, would Chris put money on it?
I already did. Mine's on the conference. I have them to win the conference. Like, it's not looking good to win the conference, though.
No, because that would require even a sweep of Iowa still has would still have IU two games back. So
yeah, listen, you never know. You didn't put the thing on. You didn't put the marker on it yet, though.
Nope. There's no marker. Only Ohio State has a marker on them right now.
all those Sunday games, man. When it was, they kept saying, "Oh, the first rubber game we have won all year." So many chances to have one series: UCLA, yeah. USC. But maybe we get some more sweeps. We do have two sweeps.
Yep. So next I look at, okay, well, if they don't get to 45, what if they got into like the lower to mid 50s? Would that be a big thing? The problem is last year there was a resume and some big wins in the season that were, you know, that you know, Dallas Baptist, Coastal Carolina, there were real serious non-conference big time wins that are just not on this team's resume. And then you also look at quad one performance. Right now, Indiana is 1-6 against in quad one games. And quite frankly, that's not going to cut it for bumping someone out of that top 45 group. Now, what could they do for quad one? There are seven games that have the potential to be quad one. A big thing about IU is most of IU's games remaining are on the road. So that helps. A road game just needs to be against a team that finishes the season in the RPI top 60. Iowa is already there. That's three games. Cincinnati is at 61. That's one game. Michigan is at 62. That's three games. Now, the unfortunate piece in there is for those to be positive, Indiana's got to win like the series or win the one Cincinnati game. And the act of them losing a home game is going to hurt their RPI, and it could possibly. Yeah. So it's one of those things. It's like you got to do well enough to beat them, but then you got to hope they do well, really, really well in the rest of their games so that they maintain that RPI by the end of the season. Now, along those lines, I actually right now think that 1-5, 1-6 is going to drop to 1-5 because Xavier in the neutral game is one of Xavier's games I think is going to drop off of the quad one and become quad two, but one of Xavier's games is going to remain quad one most likely because they just have to stay in the top 40 there. Right now, Warren Nolan's algorithms expecting Iowa to finish 57th, Cincinnati to finish 54th, but Michigan to drop farther to 66th, for whatever that's worth. I think Nolan bases that off of kind of an Elo chess thing that's done. Now, if you look at the single game resume, the best win is at UCLA, and that's a pretty good win. The worst loss is the loss to Northern Kentucky. Which is interesting compared to last year. The loss to Northern Kentucky bothered me a lot less than last year's loss to Purdue Fort Wayne did. So, Northern Kentucky, those guys can swing it. So,
well, it was also, we had seen it happen four times by the time it happened this year.
Yeah.
Last year, that thing came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. We were rolling. We were like 10-1 or something mm-hmm. when the Purdue Fort Wayne game happened. And then it happened three more times last year. Anything can happen on the midweek. Now we're used to that.
Yeah. The best series win right now is against Michigan State, but Michigan State is still only 1-7 in the RPI. The worst series loss is only 97, and that's the Illinois series, is the worst series loss. Now, I say that, I think looking at a resume, UNLV will be described that way because it was two games and lost both of them in that opening weekend. So that's probably really the worst loss is the two UNLV games, but it still technically wasn't a weekend series. So that it was kind of hard whether I include that or not. So from that perspective, I really think Indiana's got to do the job in the RPI, and 13-2 is not impossible, but boy, is it not easy. So with that, that is going to segue into our roundtable discussion, and I'm going to start this discussion with Zach. So Indiana got over the hump on coming back and winning a close game late. But then the pitching woes came back in a big way on Saturday. And given the consistency that's going to be needed in an event like the Big Ten tournament, now it's possible IU could get that four seed and be in a situation where they might be able to not throw the best arms in one of those games. But given the consistency that's needed in an event like that, with less than a month to go to win that automatic bid, what do you think? How do you think this team can be ready for that tournament?
Well, I think seeing this pool play a lot, watching ACC baseball, you always see that the teams, let's say Indiana is going to stay the seven seed. If you know, it's a little early to look at the hypothetical situations, but as of right now, Indiana would be in pool B, which is the two seed, the seven, and the 11. Indiana's the seven with UCLA being the two seed and Northwestern as the 11. So Indiana at this rate would play Northwestern on Tuesday, which is the first day of the tournament, and then UCLA on Thursday. They would have to win both to advance because the higher seed in all the pools, the top four, really have an advantage. Because, I mean, if Indiana were to lose that first game, then UCLA would just use – they would throw nobodies against Indiana that second time around because they – or the other team, it just wouldn't matter. So there's a lot of meaningless games. That's the only bad part of this kind of pool play that I would see. But as of right now, I think where Indiana is at would be a good spot. So they'd play the Tuesday, and then they'd play Thursday, and then have one day off again for the semifinal if they were to beat UCLA. And obviously in the UCLA series that the two teams played, Indiana won that Friday night game. So they would likely face that guy again. And I think that the odds are in their favor. You lost two of three. UCLA would have a target on their back, really, if that's the case, to be the 2-7 and the 11 in pool B. So from the team perspective, I think Indiana is really getting healthy now at the right time. We've heard Drew Burr should be back either this weekend, if not next week for sure, if everything goes well. Jacob Vogel is going back to his normal self. We saw him this weekend. Jackson Yarberry extended his outing from kind of one inning to two innings. I think he pitched three this weekend, or at least started the third or something. So the pitching staff is getting healthy at the right time. And if they get Drew Burr back, they could do well in a tournament like this where you're playing every other day. It's they'll have breaks. So they have the usual Grable and Gilly. Maybe you have Kraft, you have Burr, you have Vogel. So that's like five guys that you trust coming out of the bullpen or starting games as well. And I think if you have to win four games, I think it's definitely possible with the way that the schedule works to split up the days. And they really do have a chance. And obviously, we speak about this every week. The offense can compete with anybody. So if they get the good pitching, and again, my talk last week was start quick early. And Indiana played from behind on Friday night and came away with it. Saturday started really slow. Obviously, they were down 13 runs or something by the time the rain delay happened in the third inning. So that one was really a lost cause. And then Sunday, they started quick. They lost the lead. It was tied. And then they went right back to it. And that was with the home run ball. And obviously, the Big Ten tournament is in Omaha. That's a big, big stadium. So I think they'll figure it out. But the pitching being healthy, I think, is the main key when talking about if they can succeed in a pool play tournament like this.
And I think the weather situation that we've seen, the weather games that we've seen, in general, when the field is offensive, it has not played well to Indiana's strengths. And the reason being is, yes, it has helped Indiana hit a few more home runs, but Indiana's pitching staff tends to give up a lot of home runs when the field is offensive. So I think playing in a place like Charles Schwab Field is advantageous to Indiana because they can get those doubles to those big gaps in place in lieu of those home runs and then keep the ball in the ballpark when the other team hits the ball skies the ball into the air.
Yeah, and to me, and this was one of the things that stood out to me this weekend, really this whole week, and I don't know if it's a pitching matchup thing or what, but we've seen it kind of consistently that it seems like of late the games where IU loses, regardless of what pitching does, whether pitching gives up a butt ton of runs or pitching keeps it close. In games where IU struggles to string together anything, to get multiple runners on at the same time, to do anything, the offense almost never picks up. But then in games like on Sunday, when the offense, even if the offense isn't scoring right away, when guys are getting on base, multiple guys on base consistently, even if it's leaving runners on early, the offense gets sparked at some point. And so I think that as much as the pitching is important, and we know the pitching's important, I think from the offensive side, that's almost the bigger thing, regardless of what pitching does. If that offense can get, not even necessarily get to the starter, but can work counts, can work that pitch count up a bit, even if there's not a lot of runs early, that's been a big thing for this offense.
Yeah, I think to your point,
at least they still get done. You know, they sort of get done. The whole year this hasn't happened but one time. Right? One time.
Yeah.
And
for the comeback, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and at least now they've seen it. It's now, and that was a long time ago, if I remember. Right. So now it's in their mind, it's fresh. And I understand the next day was a wash or whatever. But just go to Friday night, realize you can come back on somebody. To your point, they've got the starter out of the game. They pushed that kid, he pitched great. But he, you know, the pitch count was what it was, and they took him out. And those relievers were humming it in there. I mean, they were throwing gas. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter if the first two guys struck out. Wilmore still got the hit, right? And we still got all those runs. We were down so much, and we still came back at the end. Okay. So the offense now feels like they could do it, right? I think that's big, all right? We're going to be facing these Iowa pitches. These games aren't going to be a 14-15-2, I don't think. I think the whole thing will probably be played within, what, 8-7 runs? You know, it may be Sunday, but I'm sure Friday and Saturday are going to be a lot more low-scoring games. You got to execute. And now we have something fresh in our minds from Friday night and from Sunday where, oh, we were winning, but we kind of gave it up. And then, no. Like Zach said, then we just went off on them. Use that. I hope they can use that to go forward. You that preview was all about pitching, Cass. They're first in the Big Ten, first in the Big Ten, first in the Big Ten. So I don't – I mean, are we going to assume we're going to score 12 runs? I don't.
Oh, well, no.
Let's win them 6-4 if we can.
No, but what I'm saying is I think that kind of the early indicator of full game success and then full series success is in those first few innings, are guys getting on? Are they working the counts? Because if it's a lot of couple pitch – ground outs, fly outs, nobody's getting on at all.
Oh yeah. These guys are raw.
The numbers show that does not tend to be a method for success.
Yeah.
Plus these guys are used to going through the lineup more than once, possibly even more than twice. Right. If you've talked about seven innings for some of these kids.
Right.
But I also think that there's a little bit, you gotta realize there are games this team's plays five freshmen. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that has a factor. I think that has to have a factor in some of this. Like, well, why aren't they more consistent? Well, five of these guys were in high school last year, so that's part of it.
Dickerson wasn't regularly playing at Louisville.
Yeah. But if you look at Sunday, and I think to your point, Chris, you look at Sunday, and what was different for me is I'm watching this team and I'm watching how they were doing exactly what Cass was talking about. Yeah, they only scored three runs in those first six innings, or the first five innings, but it felt like Indiana was playing better baseball for the first five innings than Maryland was. Mm-hmm. And to Cass's point, because of that, because they were getting on base, because they were scoring a run here and there, they were primed to break out of that once they kind of put all the pieces together. And if you take what Coach said, you know, part of it was that Devin Taylor decided he was going to go get in everybody's face and say, "Hey, we got to go score. Yep. We got to go do this now. We're a better team than these guys are, and we got to go do this."
Devin Taylor and Corbin Dickerson as well. I don't know if I've seen I mean, guys back to back hitting as well as they are right now. Devin Taylor, we were talking about this for a while. He was chasing the home run record, but every ball he was hitting was on the ground and it was up the middle. It was to the opposite field. I mean, that's just like a real professional hitter right there. And Dickerson, I had the TrackMan analytics up on my screen the other day. In the Sunday game, he hit four balls over 100 miles per hour. I mean, every ball was hit directly on the barrel. And so now you add Will Moore to the top of the lineup. If his on-base percentage stays the way it is, or at least around it somewhat, if you get guys on, you can't walk Devin Taylor. And then you have Corbin Dickerson behind, and Jake Hanley hit two home runs. Maybe he's back in the swing of things. So when they start innings that is really at 8 or 9 in the lineup, and if they get on base, that's really a problem. And that showed on Sunday in the final few innings. They open the inning with either the top of the lineup or kind of 9, 1, and 2. And they scored in almost all of those innings. I would like to look at the numbers themselves, but when Dickerson, Taylor, it seemed like Dickerson got up to the plate with a guy on second base almost every time. I mean, so when those guys produce in front of them, that's what makes this offense so productive.
Dickerson's on the top of all of college baseball for RBIs. I know that.
Yeah.
I mean, like top five, like really high up there.
Yeah.
I mean, I bet Taylor changed his swing a little bit coming out of the leadoff hole. I mean, you know, the coach puts me in the leadoff hole. Maybe I'm just supposed to get some hits here and there. And then they moved him down a little and maybe he opened up that swing a little. I wouldn't put anything past him. I feel like he'd do whatever he wants.
Yeah. I really think from here on out, if Will Moore keeps this up, those RBI numbers are just going to inflate even more. And for Taylor as well, going into the draft year, I think that's huge for him. If Will Moore can get on base, this offense will score way more than they already are. I really think so.
And me too. And yes, Chris, you are correct. Yep. Corbin Dickerson leads the NCAA by 4.
Yep.
Oh, he's first now?
He's first in the NCAA, and the next closest is 4 RBIs behind him.
That's for having the big weekend. I think he was like 3rd the last time I had looked before the weekend.
No, he is number 1 all by himself.
And I would point out that Will Moore is 17th in the country in on-base percentage. And so having that ahead of the guy who leads the country in RBI and having Devin Taylor in between the two, like that's a scary first 3 in the batting order.
Those 3 on Sunday. Moore, Taylor, Dickerson, they combined, they all had 3 hits each, 3 RBIs, 3 runs scored as well. I mean, that was just an insane statistic to look at.
Yeah. And you look at all the good pitching they faced. I mean, they're not doing this, you know, against, you know, Big East pitching.
No. Well, and in fact, some of their best hitting has been against some of the best in the conference.
Yeah.
And that has not been unusual for IU's bats. For whatever reason, they tend to hit the guys with stuff a bit more than the guys who just throw nothing but junk.
Absolutely. Right. Well, it's because they're being trained to hit professional pitching.
Right.
Their style of hitting is designed to hit professional pitching because it's designed to get them ready to play at the next level. And so how do a lot of these teams counter that? Well, you get the guys who don't have a 4-seam fastball. So what do? They throw a couple different off speed pitches, but eventually what those guys do is they just end up walking guys.
Carl, I'm also looking at the bracket again. I guess the initial question was with the Big Ten tournament. Yeah. Indiana somehow climbs from the 7 seed to the 6 seed. That really changes the pitching plan because they would play Tuesday in the first game against the lowest seed, and then they would play not until Friday. So there would be two days of rest. And then so if they were to get out of it, then you use your guys the day before and then you're playing in a semifinal game in a championship. Mm-hmm. I think with a short pitching staff, that's really a problem. I think really every team in the Big Ten, they have kind of 1 to 2 main guys and that's about it. But the 7 seed would be perfect for Indiana if they can keep that going the rest of the season, unless you find a way to jump into the top 4, that would be the best.
Yeah.
But we're being reasonable. The seven's perfect.
Yeah.
So this is why we have Zach on our team here. He knows the ACC pod tournament. He's lived it.
Yeah.
Well, but the point is, I don't see that as being a complete. I mean, they're only a half a game out of the four seed. Granted, you're going to have to. You've got two tough series in there. Sorry, I'm not calling Purdue a tough series, but the Indiana is going to be in a position where they may to do that. They're going to have to sweep that Purdue series,
and they'll have nothing to lose. They'll be dead in the water.
Yeah, but you get. I mean, it's not unreasonable to see Indiana go 7-2 in the rest of the Big Ten, which would put Indiana at 19-11. That by percentage may be enough to get that four seed. It's not impossible. Now, the bad thing is, again, like I said, the tiebreakers are not going to go their way in that group of teams. So,
and really, sorry
to clear, but
look back on it. But that USC final game when they were up by 9, that is going to be the difference between maybe the entire season if you look at it in that aspect of getting. Between the 4 and the 7 or 8 seed and RPI and tournament hopes. And that's just, it's a tough one to swallow looking back.
It wouldn't have been quad one, but it still would have been a quality series win that would have been looked at. That's something you stick up on a resume.
Yep.
Right now, you know, Michigan State, sorry, that's not a, no one's going to call that a quality series win. They would have called USC a quality series win. So
getting Iowa on the road would be.
Possibly. My concern, though, is they go get Iowa on the road and then Iowa collapses because their IPA is only 57. Iowa's resume is based exclusively on Big Ten performance. If they collapse, if they lose the Indiana series and then collapse against the two West Coast teams, they'll be looked at as many of the recent Iowa teams that haven't, or at least the last year's Iowa team that was like, well, they had a bunch of promise and then didn't deliver. So. Yeah.
They likely lose at Oregon also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say, Carl, to your point on the possibility of sneaking into that four seed, I'm honestly not sure if that would be the best possible thing for I like the options where there's a day off somewhere in the middle of play. Because as the four seed, they would not play until the third day.
Right,
and they would have to play consecutive. They would have to play.
They're playing those games, but they don't have to win both of them. That's the thing.
No, but they would have to, in order to win it all, they would have to win.
No, because we'd be the highest seed. We'd be the highest seed in the pod, so that might be a dead.
Yeah. So the point is, one of those, you don't know which, because it depends on the first, how that first game goes. You only have to beat whoever wins that first game.
But they would still have to play 4 games in 4 days. They wouldn't necessarily have to win 4 games in 4 days.
No, but the point is, you also know which one you don't have to win, so you don't have to throw any of your top pitchers in that game.
That's fair.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. That's a huge advantage to where you have to cover 27 versus 36 innings. That's a
that's true.
The flaw with the bracket that if you do the team with the highest seed and then you're all 1-1, even though you beat them, then you're done. Your season could be over. It's just that's why the ACC moved away from it.
Yeah,
and adopted the bracket, and now the Big Ten moves to it. So I guess it can work in your favor, completely out of your favor. Really frustrating if you do beat the higher seed and somehow not come out on top.
Yeah. And to answer that question, though, Zach, I think there's a reason that the Big Ten has decided this, and it's different than the ACC. And that is if you're – let's take a look at this. Rutgers is right on the cusp there. If you're Rutgers and you get the 12 seed – are you going to be happy flying out to Omaha to lose one game and then turn around? That's what the ACC is facing. But the ACC is, now granted, there's an opportunity a team from out west is going to have to do that. But I think at this point, the Big Ten's not quite at the point at which they're going to bring a team that far to play one game. So I think that's kind of where part of that's coming from at this point. The hope is, I think, that the Big Ten becomes a big enough baseball conference that becomes acceptable, and eventually they will go to something like that. All right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer, Chris Feeney, and Zach Horwitz, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.